Hi, everyone. You are in for an absolute treat today. We have two incredible women on the podcast, Penny Finer and Jerry Topfer. They are the co-founders of Be Still. And Be Still is a company that creates customized meditations to improve the mental health in the workforce. Such amazing work. I actually have the opportunity to teach for them with Be Still, and I'm so beyond grateful to know these ladies personally, to be able to work with them and learn from them, and really learn from the way that they lead. Not only are Penny and Jerry the coolest, most down-to-earth ladies that I know, but they also run a non-for-profit called Kula for Karma. Kula for Karma provides mindfulness-based mental health care to people who cannot easily afford it, who cannot easily access it. So the work that they do, which scales from the corporate sphere to the non-for-profit work that they do, is really, really meaningful, really special. And I know that these two lead and serve from a very aligned and authentic place. So needless to say, I'm so pleased to have you both on the podcast. A very, very warm welcome to you.
Thank you, Lil.
Thank you.
So I have yet to interview two people at once, but we're just going to go for it. I want to dive into the wonderful work that you do and just honestly have an open conversation around these tools and practices that we get to share with the world, how mindfulness and meditation have helped you. And I haven't really asked you this, but I'm so curious how you two found this work and how you two found each other, because your match, the way you work together, is so, so inspiring. And yeah, I'm excited to learn more.
Well, I do want to just take a step back before we dive in. And I want to thank you, Lily, because this is really the epitome of, human connection. And authentic human connection, because we met Lily in the pandemic and we met Lily on Zoom. And, you know, that was a time where we really, you know, everybody, as we all know, but everything was locked down. And we just had this like heart to heart connection and, you know, and really went deeper in really going through what you were going through at the time, what we were going through at the time. And we really, you know, allowed ourselves to be our most vulnerable selves with each other, which evolved into a really, and again, it's ageless, because we're both two different, you know, generations, and we have such an impactful friendship that is going to be a lifelong relationship and friendship that is so precious. So thank you so much for inviting us. And I can say, just from my perspective, I feel like my social anxiety was more progressive than any of my other, addictions. And we'll talk more about that later, but my social anxiety was really, I struggled with. And I remember a teacher, in an acting class saying to me to, try on yoga, you know, I think that would help. And that was like when I was in my 30s and never really was exposed to yoga, took a class, you know, I felt like I landed and met my people. And that was the first opportunity that I was in an environment where I was moving my body in a mindful way. I was taught how to breathe, taught how to meditate. And that became the tool that allowed me to navigate the social anxiety. And so I'll let Penny really talk about how she came to the practice of mindfulness, and then we'll dive, I guess, into how Kula was launched.
I appreciate you, Jerry. And before we go to Penny, I'm curious. Social anxiety can come in, you know, many forms and have many reasons. And I'm curious what it looked like in your case and what it felt like for you at that age?
First, you know, it's all because of all the painstaking work I've done over a lifetime, realized that it really was childhood trauma. And that kind of informed my life as I went out into the world. A product of divorce and a divorce and abandonment. And so my social anxiety is like a visceral experience. You know, I feel it in my body, you know, and what I have done over a lifetime is not show up, and in a way that where like my insides like match my outsides, you know, that there was this like real, you know, so I show up a certain way with a lot of light and a lot of energy, but on the inside, you know, I was struggling. So it was going against the grain so many times without a lot of tools, you know, to really, you know, I would cancel, I would fib why I couldn't show up. And then that, you know, and then the guilt and the shame over, you know, that stays with you. And not having tools to recognize that, to sit with that, to move through that. You know, I guess it was always overcompensating because I kept putting myself in those situations where I would have to show up or get up and speak to hundreds of people at a time. But it was like constant, that fight or flight, you know, it was like, you know, so much work. And now I'm on the other side, where I could feel for that version of myself, the pressure I would put on myself, needing to think I needed to show up a certain way, you know, and because of how I felt about myself, not being good enough, smart enough, are you going to like me? You know, the pressure I'd put on myself. And now I recognize, I check in with my intention of why I'm showing up. And I do my best to stay in humility and not put that kind of pressure on myself anymore.
Not be in such a consistent fear state, which is really, really quite common. So thank you for opening up about that. And Penny, I'm curious how you came to this practice, to the practice of mindfulness, meditation, yoga. When in your journey did you discover that?
Well, I will be celebrating 40 years clean and sober this coming December. So I came to the practice, I think, through the door of substance use. And while I got sober and I was participating in a 12-step program initially and also part of an outpatient program in Manhattan, I didn't really have any of the tools, as Jerry mentioned, to address the chaos that was going on in between my ears. My dad used to say, you know, what's going on between your ears? And little by little, I felt like I was holding on for dear life to sobriety while not being able to navigate some of the things that brought me to using self-medicating with drugs, basically, and not really getting clear and not exploring and just kind of holding on. I did lots of things that were suggested in the rooms, you know, people, places, and things, and could embrace the serenity prayer and all sorts of tools that were part of the 12-step program. And still the chaos in between my ears was screaming at me. So someone recommended a yoga class. I went to a yoga class, and in those days, yoga was a 90-minute practice, not anymore. And for about 88 of the 90 minutes, the craziness inside my head was still the craziness inside my head. And then there were a couple of moments where I really felt a sense of relief and And the monkey mind that is and has been so much a part of my experience kind of settled and quieted down a little bit. This idea of linking breath to movement and being so super focused on trying to get the asana right. And for me, you know, I my nickname as a kid was Penny Perfect, which was part of what led to, you know, needing to self-medicate to deal with the anxiety that came with never ever being perfect, and the desire to be that. And so practicing something as simple as tree pose, you know, was an opportunity for me to just focus on standing on one foot, you know, and breathe and not think about, you know, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? Where am I going? What do I need to do? None of that. It just somehow there were moments of quiet that really felt nurturing. And I came back to the studio and went back and went back and went back. And little by little, you know, those 2 minutes turned into 5 minutes, turned into 10 minutes. And I'm thrilled to say that by the time I really was able to embrace the practice, I could pull into the parking lot and already feel, you know, like, oh, I had arrived. I really came through the door of the physical practice. I had been pretty much an avid sports aficionado, playing tennis and running and biking and, you know, things that kept me in motion, because when I was in motion, I didn't have to listen to the thoughts as much. And longing for a way to develop a meditation practice. And that was eluding me for a lot of years, many years. And then I finally was talking to a friend who was experiencing the same kind of difficulty. And we made a commitment to try holding each other accountable and being meditation buddies. So we said we would do it and check in with each other for 40 days straight. We did. And at the end of the 40 days, Ben said, "Now what?" And I said, "Another 40 days. And that was about 7 years ago, I think. And so the practice of sitting in silence came to me way, way after, you know, this the benefits and the joy and the juiciness of an asana practice. When I first started to try to meditate, I could only meditate walking. Or standing up, I would go in circles around my dining room table. And then at the end of what I thought was the time that I was allocating to the meditation practice, sit down for a minute or two. And I will say, as Jerry mentioned, for me, the mindfulness, the asana, I developed a chanting practice. It has all come together in such a rich, healing way, and saves me over and over and over again.
Thank you for sharing. And I love that. I love that you started 40 days with an accountability partner and you kept going. And both of you really live this stuff and you teach it and you share it, you live it, and you're human along the way, honoring where you're at. And I really see that and I really appreciate that. And something I'm personally learning and navigating is that I can be really, really in my head sometimes and really hard on myself. And similar kind of perfectionist qualities can show up. And I find that when I snap out of that, then I align with something greater. And I'm talking about, like, for instance, service work. When I get out of my own head and I'm really there to help other people, to serve other people, whatever that might look like. It's a whole different type of energy, and it's such a lovelier way to be, and it's such a lovelier way to live. And I know that you both have formed your careers around that type of work. So I'm curious if you can speak to being in that purpose-driven work, that service-driven work, how it's helped you, and is it something that's like self-care for you?
It is, you know, first of all, you know, service is just everything. And, you know, we both have kids, you know, your age, and I can speak for my kids that, you know, they're out doing their careers and they, you know, have been taught over a lifetime to blend their careers with service. And, you know, what an opportunity. I feel like we were chosen to do this work and that we get to do it. And that is, you know, when I, you know, had a teacher that went to my yoga teacher, went abroad to work with children that, you know, in this a smile train to offer them, they are having cleft palate surgery and offering them mindfulness and came back into back to New Jersey and talked about it. In that moment, it was again one of those visceral experiences that this is what we need to be doing here in our own backyard. So, you know, about 20 years ago, I had the opportunity to launch Kula for Karma, which is offering therapeutic yoga and mindfulness to populations struggling with mental health, trauma, and addiction. And so to be able at that time, we were, you know, offering these resources, you know, and to this day at no cost to the recipients. And so, you know, to be able to recognize what the practice had done and continues to do for me on a daily basis, you know, be able to offer this and to really see how the influence and the impact on you know, everyone from, you know, young juveniles and individuals, you know, in struggling in domestic violence, survivors of domestic violence, and, you know, the, you know, first responders, you know, to really be able to offer this out, you know, and know that you're doing service because of how it worked for you. It's like, it doesn't get any better. You know, it's like, it, you know, it works for you and you're offering it out and you're really in this lifetime, really making a difference, really creating, you know, changing lives and creating a legacy. You know, it is palpable. And at some point we had something called Teen Kula. So all these kids in high school started to, you know, get involved and engaged and raising money and picking populations that they wanted to support. And those 17-year-olds are now 31-year-olds. And that is so, it just keeps on giving. You know, it's an extraordinary, opportunity to be able to tap into something that is so purposeful. So, immense gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And Penny, I'm curious what service means to you, how it feels to you, and how it's been such a big part of your life.
It's so interesting when Jerry was talking about the beginnings of Kula. I was reminded of when I first met Jerry and also this group of young women that I worked with at a group home in Ridgewood. It was called Woodley. And these girls were removed from their families of origin because of physical or emotional abuse. They lived together like sisters, quote unquote, in a large house. And they ranged in age from 12 to 17. I think at 18, they aged out of the system. And this was a program sponsored by Children's Aid and Family Services. And our initial concept of Kula was that the teachers, our teachers, and that in those days it was me and Jerry, would go in and teach for like 6 weeks at a time and then rotate. And when I went to Woodley the first time, I was so moved by how difficult it was for these young women to find stillness, to allow me into their world, I was met with a lot of curiosity and resistance, kind of both happening at the same time. And I noticed that, you know, there was this desire, but on the other hand, guardedness. And I said to Jerry, you know, I know that we talked about 6 weeks on, 6 weeks off, but I really feel like the same person needs to come back to these girls every week and show up. Because they had just experienced people coming and going and coming and going and mostly going. And so I started there and I left there 4 years later, just coming back, coming back, coming back. And in some instances, I felt like a human boo-boo bunny, you know, just the fact that I was showing up on a regular basis and they could learn to trust me and trust each other. We, at first there was no, you know, there were no, partner poses. There were nothing. They were just kind of, like I said, like trying to be like sisters, but they were really at each other's throats a lot. And the practice helped them find each other, find themselves and find each other in a way that was just extraordinarily beautiful. And the gift of being able to give this practice to these girls, I get goosebumps when I think about it. I'll tell you one quick story. This may end up in the podcast or not. But we had a gala that year and we featured these girls and they had choreographed a yoga dance. The girls ranged in not only in age, but also in size from like teeny weeny to like 6 foot tall, big women, teenagers, but women. And we got to this venue. We were doing a dress rehearsal the afternoon of, and we were doing that at my house. And the girls, lots of them said, we can't do this. We're just too nervous. We're too afraid. It's not going to work. We've never done this before. And I said, listen, whoever shows up, and that's who's meant to be there. And I'll be there. And I would be so honored if you all would come and join. They all showed up. We're backstage before the, you know, the curtain goes up, and they asked to form like a circle. We all held hands, and they were praying, and they were praying that they do what they organized, what they prepared, what they created, and not F up. And they were just so committed to doing what they agreed to do, even with the fear and the anxiety and the not knowing. And it was just an incredible experience. I remember saying to Jerry afterwards, I feel like if I drop dead right the second, it'd be okay, you know, because they got what they needed. And you know what? It just, every population, as Jerry said, every population that we've worked with, from, you know, at-risk girls to teen boys to, in the old days, we were working with people dealing with acute illnesses, in cancer treatment and cardiac issues, and the universality of the efficacy of the practice and the gift of being able to share it was sometimes surprising and often nurturing. Continue, you know, it's kind of like the gift that keeps on giving. You give, you give it away, you get, you give, you get, you give, you get. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
The morning ritual is sponsored by Recess Mood. One healthier alternative to alcohol after a stressful day is Recess Mood. So Recess Mood is a sparkling water, and it's infused with functional ingredients like magnesium and stress balancing adaptogens. So you can relax without the alcohol or the hangover. Podcast listeners get 15% off the Recess Mood Sampler Pack at takearecess.com/TMR. Recess Mood is made with real fruit, and it comes in four delicious flavors like strawberry rose and raspberry lemon. With only 20 calories and no added sugar, it's a guilt-free way to unwind. You deserve a healthier way to unwind. Head to takearecess.com/TMR and get 15% off Recess Mood, your go-to alcohol replacement.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, this might be like an overused description. It might be cheesy, but these practices, right? Yoga, meditation, mindfulness as a whole, it always feels like every time coming home to myself. And so to be able to share that with people where, you know, home is less consistent, or maybe there's a lack of stability in that sense, to give that gift of coming home to yourself again and again is huge, right? Does that make sense when I say coming home to yourself? Do you feel that in your own practice?
Yes, for sure. And that notion of coming home to yourself is so powerful, because then wherever you are, you're home.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with Kula means community. What we're able to create is Kulas within Kulas. So our work doesn't necessarily look like a traditional yoga class where everybody gets on their mat, rolls out their mat, you know, and ready to practice. You know, I remember we were working with the teen boys that were, you know, like 6'5" at 13 years old, and like crazy energy. And they were in, you know, living in this residential facility for different reasons, you know, from everything for waiting for trial, going to prison. So you're talking hormones, and then all of, you know, life challenges. And they would come into the room and it was insanity. And, you know, there wasn't, you know, some would not get on their mat. Some would sit, you know, there's this one boy that was sitting in the back of the room with his fro and his pick, you know, and he would like really down us, eye us down. And the energy was like, you know, very scary at times. And at the end of practice, you know, first of all, at the end of practice, we gave these boys, like these 15, 20 boys that are 15 and 16 and 17, and 18 year old, these little beanie babies, to put on their belly to teach them a breathing exercise. And in the moment of stillness, you see the tears flowing. And they would come up and say, can they keep the beanie babies? Can we have the beanie babies? They're like 6'5" kids, you know? And this kid that was sitting at the back of the room with the pick, he got up and, you know, and we had to roll up our mats and put them back in a car. And he would say, well, can I help you? Can I walk you to the car? And we'd be like, okay, yeah, yeah. And he would look at us and he'd say, are you coming back? Well, I see you next week. And this is what we have to, this work, this Kula work is, you know, that was that kid's yoga. Sitting in the back of the room, taking in the energy and asking if we're coming back again next week. So it looks different, you know, and in the class of the Penny, the cancer patients that we worked with, including my mother, was part of that cancer treatment, you know, and we look back at pictures and so many people, including my mother, did not survive. And in that moment, we created this palpable, loving, you know, Kula for individuals. And, you know, to be able to be a part of it, and you know, because you're a teacher, to be the observer, you know, and it doesn't get any better than that.
I know. I know. And the energy is reciprocal in those moments. It's like, I'm feeling it. I know you're feeling it. You know, I'm feeling it in the back and the forth. And we're both fueled and we're both being filled, and it's contagious. And that is so great. When you were saying you were just breathing and let the tears come, I felt that too, right? In practices, when you just slow down and you really tune in and you can let the emotions rise and release, I mean, it's so therapeutic. And Penny, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you told me once that you have a practice that you call Time for Tears.
Mm-hmm.
Can That's you tell right. us about that?
Sure. Basically, I kind of developed it. It is, I do call it Time for Tears as part of my my morning practice. I start with chanting, and then I move to my meditation cushion and I sit. And during the sitting, silent sitting, I carve out the permission. I give myself permission to let the emotions come and flow and move through me. And I think I started it, if I remember correctly, after my dad passed away. We adored each other, and he was my mentor and an incredible man. And I didn't really, I've lost grandparents and friends, but not a parent, and I didn't know how to process the grief that I was feeling. It kept coming up for me in waves and waves and waves, and not a whole lot of relief from the waves. You know, the waves just, it was like a tsunami a lot of the time. And I found myself resisting and kind of trying to get over it, if you will. And then I realized that's just not being kind to myself, and it's not going to work. So I surrendered and decided that I would literally carve out X amount of time each morning for whatever to come up, Time for Tears. And I've continued to invite that into my morning practice. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't, and it doesn't matter. It's not, you know, there's a way of, you know, kind of when you embrace that and allow it to be, I think I've been able to kind of sever the mindset around trying to understand it or needing to understand it, and just be in this place of allowing. And it's interesting that we're talking about this. Last night, I went to a transformational breathing workshop, and it was 2 hours of breathing and allowing emotion to come up. And Jerry, remember when you did the, I think it was the level 2 training with Amy Weintraub, and there was this wild sense of just people getting into their feelings and emotions, and the room was filled with all kinds of moaning and groaning and noises and grunting. And that's what this was like. It was quite incredible. There were 20 people in the room, and there were moments where we were together in this sea of feeling, and that permission to be there and to do that. Very, very cathartic.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine. I feel like sometimes life and the world that we live in doesn't give us time and space to let our emotions come up. Like crying like that can be really inconvenient, you know, in a business meeting or in a relationship. We don't want to stir the pot. We don't want to let stuff out. We this, that, and the other. So to be able to own that for yourself, carve out that time and space. And then, like you're saying, with this workshop, to do that in, and what you do, to do that in community is so healing and so cathartic. And, I'm curious, because you both live and breathe this type of work, what other practices, tools, strategies do you have? Which practices are really meaningful for you to be able to show up as this full, inspired, wonderful woman?
Wow. I will say, daily practice is important. And I am part of a 12-step program. So I do go to AA meetings every day, 7 a.m. every day. And that is, I feel everybody, you know, would benefit from a 12-step program. It is definitely a recipe for living and has allowed me to really navigate healing in a very profound way. I have a prayer practice where I sit, and it's like a three-part prayer practice. You know, one is the gratitude. Second is I pray for people who are suffering. And then the third are all my challenges, my resentments, my unkind thoughts, you know, and just ask, please, you know, universe, you know, take them away, take them all away. And I turn my will and my life over to the care for me. It happens to be God, whatever anyone believes. And I meditate. I meditate every morning. And that, in addition to, I am a very physical, I also do the insane stuff like running marathons and Barry's boot camp and hot yoga and, you know, and training. And mind, body, spirit is really, is just, you know, it's almost, it's the launching pad. In terms of, you know, they say off the mat into the world, you know, off the daily practice into the world, and which has just allowed me to, you know, the easy pass to pausing and to being mindful about what comes out of my mouth. And to, I love the piece about looking at my part, because it's very powerful when you look at your piece. And it's empowering because you don't have to do a thing or say the right thing in order for me to be okay and good. I always, I operate in integrity now. And I do the next right thing, even if I'm fearful, you know, and that anxiety, it comes up, but it has absolutely softened. And I always think, how am I going to feel the next day? You know, and when I know that I'm just not going to feel good, I show up, you know, even if it's hard. And so that's, I am in such gratitude every day I wake up that for today, my body is working. And, you know, and so that's a lot, but it's, I feel like everything I then choose in my life, I'm now in flow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds to me that all of those practices, well, despite all of those practices, you're still human and you still have anxiety and you still have fear and you still have these visceral emotions and feelings. But instead of letting them run the show, you have more choice and responsibility and you take ownership and act in that really empowered way versus falling victim to these difficult emotions. Is that right?
Oh my God. We say same landscape seen through different eyes. That shit, sorry, is going to happen to us. And the only control we have is the way we choose when we have this daily practice is how we want, how we choose to not react, but respond. So I'm either going in the direction of insanity or in the direction of peace and calm. And that is my choice. And that, you know, is it really, truly, like you said, it's such a cliche about something else, but it really is the ability to choose how you want to show up in each moment and to show up with grace. Is just so much easier. You just took a breath. I saw that. It's just so much easier. So grit and grace, grit and grace. So.
Grit and grace. Yeah, cool. And Penny, what are your thoughts on this?
I like what you said, Lily, about being human and with all of the tools that we have, that we use, you know, I'll be the first to admit that sometimes I choose not to open the toolbox, which doesn't serve me at all. Maybe that what I need in that moment is to wallow in whatever feeling I'm feeling and not. Sometimes it's tricky because those tools, I find I use them every now and again to sort of spiritually bypass what it is that I'm feeling. I know how to use them. I know that they work. And I know that almost always they will be available to me. And every now and again, I just need to experience the rawness of the emotion and sit with it and be with it for, you know, for a little bit longer than I might be comfortable with. This partnership that Jerry and I share with Kula and with Be Still, you know, each of the missions, the mission of Kula, the mission of Be Still, is bigger than the two of us. And there have been incidences, moments in time where things got really challenging. And the baby, if you will, whether it's the Be Still baby or the Kula baby, takes precedence over what personal stuff I might be going through or what Jerry might be going through. And we find a way to not only use the tools that we have to manage our own feelings, but to manage the relationship, to be authentic, to be honest, to be open to, Jerry always says, you know, how are you? How are you doing? And then how are you really doing? You know, so there's an opportunity for self-reflection, even in the context of, you know, a business meeting or pre-business meeting, if you will, which really creates a safe container. And from that safe container, all things are possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds that you show up, you bring your whole selves, but you're not stuck in just me, your own stuff. You can really step back and see the bigger picture, that what you're doing is so much bigger than you, and have that perspective. And I imagine that that's also a good approach to like any mm-hmm. relationship.
Yeah. You know, Penny brought up the fact, you know, we are women entrepreneurs. I mean, right here, right? The three of us, we are, you know, women-owned businesses. And, you know, as, you know, we talked about Kula. And in the pandemic, Penny and I, when we put together a succession plan for Kula, part of it was starting a for-profit, which is Be Still. And Be Still is about offering mindfulness, which are these 15-minute meditation breaks and well-being webinars in the corporate world. And what we decided was to create this model where a percentage of the clients that we work with, a percentage of each corporate contract will go to Kula for Karma. Like, you know, Tom's, which inspired us, or Bombas socks. So we really looked at it as a, you know, corporate social impact partner in Kula when starting Be Still. And, you know, I could just say that, you know, and I talk about this a lot to young people that are looking to be entrepreneurs or women in general. Find yourself a partner. There is nothing like the right partner to really, really complement each other's skill set, but also, you know, giving each other permission to be the best version of yourself. And I think that's what Penny and I have done over 16, 17 years. And it's again, you know, having the opportunity to now do the same with Be Still is extraordinary. You know, also in gratitude to get to a certain age, certain decade, to still be able to work and stay relevant and to be productive. And, you know, we talk about Penny and I a lot now in terms of being long life learners and stay curious and to surround ourselves with young people, you know, is such a gift. You know, as a young person, you're just grinding. Or I could say, I speak for myself. I'm sure Penny speaks the same. We were grinding. What's next? What's next? Next, next, next. You know, now then you get to a certain place, a certain platform where like you're just looking out and you're just so, you finally get process. You finally get being present. It takes a lifetime. And we always say, I hope it doesn't take a lifetime for a lot of young people that we speak and interact with. But to be here and to continue to do what we do is just like, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you both, from what I can tell, have been through so much life experience, personal work together as individuals, and you have all that beneath you, behind you, supporting you, and it makes it really nice to work with both of you in this intimate way. And for our listeners, if you want to bring mindfulness into the workplace, absolutely get in contact with Penny and Jerry at Be Still. I'm a teacher for them. We can work together. But anyways, I will include more about them and how to contact them in the show notes below. I'll also include information on Kula for Karma, their non-for-profit, and definitely check out their work and get in contact with them. And I like to end these interviews with some like rapid fire random questions. So we'll just do a couple. I'm going to go Penny, Jerry. And I'm kind of thinking of them on the spot, but I've got a couple in mind. So Penny, you ready?
I'm listening.
Rapid fire. What do you do for fun?
Dance.
Cool. Okay, me too. Jerry, this is like two-part question. Are you a coffee, matcha, tea, smoothie girl? What do you like to drink in the morning?
Triple quad espresso.
Wow. Okay. If you could have that quad espresso with anyone dead or alive, who would it be?
My mother.
Awesome. And Penny, what gives you energy? And I'm talking real energy, not caffeine energy.
I only drink decaf. What gives me energy? Purpose and nature and just living life large.
Cool. And then Jerry, this is more of an ask. Could you right now think of an intention to set the tone for the rest of our day?
Intention is to be able to spread your humanness, to spread your love, to really have a human connection with all those that you touch on your journey for today.
Goosebumps. Thank you. And we're going to end the episode the way we always do, with a deep breath in and a full breath out. And have a lovely day. Thank you both for coming on.
Thank you, Lily.
Thank you for having us, Lil.
You're welcome.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.